I'm going to talk about longing, which I have talked about in the past, but a couple of recent events have sort of stirred it up again for me in a good way, not a bad thing. So I don't know how many of you have had this experience where somebody has asked you how long you've been sitting. How about you, Jeff?
15 to 20 years.
Yeah. Because I had a similar experience. This is historically now, but somebody asked me, was talking to me about sitting, and so how long have you been doing this? And I said, probably at that time, 30 years. And the person was like, what? And he said, well, what kept you going for 30 years? And around the same time that I had this interaction with this person, I came across this poem by Rengetsu. And it's entitled, Longing in the Wind. I await my beloved who is not here. The moon and the pines and the voice of the wind provoke my longing. I await my beloved who is not here. The moon and the pines and the voice of the wind provoke my longing. Now, there was something about that poem which was like, just touched something in me. In terms of having been asked that question and talking to this woman friend of mine, it happened in a number of different ways. But the first thing that it reminded me of was, I don't know if you're familiar in the world of psychology, this is going to get technical now for a moment, but there's this concept called attachment theory. And what it's based on is that when we're born, one of the most crucial things is to form a healthy connection to our mother. And if that is broken in any way, that leads to a variety of developmental problems. So this attachment, this connection is crucial. And so this longing, it reminded me of the relationship that I had with my biological mother who left when I was a year old. And so I sat with this, you know, particularly in my body. I think the body contains a truth about these, sometimes about these kinds of questions. And this is where the longing came in. You know, it was the word just fit, but I couldn't really connect it to what, in a direct way, to the feeling that I had in my body when I started thinking about my mother, who I never really knew. And I sort of became aware of the fact that even after all those years, I mean, 30, probably 50 years, 40 years, you know, I had thought about her over time, but in this particular time, it connected with this poem and this feeling of longing and also the question about how do you stick with this. And so I think part of sticking with the practice is we take it into our body, becomes just part of who we are. And so it was the same thing with this broken attachment that I had with my mother, and that there was this longing was the word for it, to be reconnected, to reestablish that powerful connection, even if it only lasted a year. And this reminded me of a story which I have mentioned before. And this is about Maizumi Roshi. If you're not familiar with the lineage, there's Maizumi Roshi, and then he made Bernie Glassman, and Bernie Glassman became a Roshi, and then Bernie Glassman made Robert Kennedy, my teacher. He gave the Dharma transmission to him, and Bob became a teacher, and then it was passed down to me. So Maizumi was a big figure in the field of Zen back in the 60s when there was this movement of all these Eastern religions coming to the West. And this is about Maizumi. This brief story is about Maizumi at a week-long retreat at ZCLA, Zen Center of Los Angeles. And as the story goes, they were about 5 days into a week-long retreat. And if you've ever sat a longer sesshin, there's a lot of energy, and it's sort of a collective energy, and it's sort of, I mean, the words don't really describe the experience, but this energy fills the zendo. So it's deep and strong. And Maizumi was about to give a teisho. And sitting to his right was Bernie Glassman. And so when Maizumi sat down to give the teisho, he sat literally for 2 or 3 minutes and in silence. Now, 2 or 3 minutes is a long period of time. So, you know, this teacher sits down for 2 or 3 minutes and doesn't speak a word. So you can imagine in this energy, the tension in a way that gets created by this. And then after about 2 or 3 minutes, he looks at Bernie Glassman and he says, "What is mother?" And as I recall, Bernie, who was a teacher at the time, gave what we call a Zen answer, you know, something like everything that flows out of the oneness, some kind of thing like that. And so Bernie gives this Zen answer, and Maizumi shouts out, "No!" And then there was silence again for a few more minutes. In those 2 or 3 minutes, as you can probably imagine, there was a tension, sort of, what next? And so he just sat there silently. And then this young kid, who was, I think this is his first retreat, you know, he was, quote-unquote, a novice, he hadn't been around the Zen block yet. He raises his hand and he says, "Roshi, can you please tell us, what is Mother?" And again, Maizumi sat for a few minutes, and he began to sob unashamedly. Now, Japanese Zen teachers don't sob. The Japanese culture, that's out of the culture, right? It doesn't, there's not permission in the culture to openly sob, particularly a Zen master. But here, Maizumi breaks down, not just in tears, but literally sobbing. And it turns out that Maizumi had been very close to his mother, who died when he was a little boy. And in that moment, I think he was giving the most direct and simple answer, heartfelt answer, to the student's question. And he did that in expressing his grief and his longing to be reconnected, to be reunited with his mother. And as I said, this is a very powerful expression for a man that comes from a Japanese culture. So this, you know, remembering this and having my own awareness, become, you know, starting to become aware of my own longing for that broken connection with my mother. So it took me in that place of longing. That longing that had carried me through 30 years of Zen practice. But what I discovered was, there were sort of, it's subtle, but there were two levels of longing. There was the level where that connection, that broken connection with a mother that I never really knew, but in some way, energetically or spiritually, I don't know the right word, there was that connection. And there was a part of me that, I don't know, hadn't grieved, hadn't resolved the fact that that connection was broken. But what I discovered, because I was sitting with this, there was an even deeper connection that I longed for. And that was the connection to, whatever word again you want to use, the divine or the state of being one. You know, and this is, I think, true for all of us, that we have lost or become disconnected from that original state of one, right, where we're in the uterus. And, you know, I think there's not only that connection to mother, but we haven't developed yet to create the separations that we have and we experience from each other. So there's that state of one. So there's two things. There's the connection to the mother, and there's the connection that we have because there is no thought, just the physical connection to the universe. So once we are out in the world and we start developing all these ideas and concepts which create the separation, I think, my own experience is that that's a broken connection, and all those years of sitting was motivated by my longing to be reunited to that sense of oneness. Now, this poem is from a book called The Poetry of Zen. It's called The Troubled Heart. The skylark departs, leaving in the wilderness a small red lily. Thus, without a friend or attachment, my heart remains alone. The skylark departs, leaving in the wilderness a small red lily. Thus, without a friend or attachment, my heart remains alone. You know, I've talked about Dharma gates a lot. And so one of the things that I realized was that longing was a Dharma gate. It was presenting itself to me to offer a teaching. And the teaching really was a call to reunite, to go deeper and deeper and deeper and realize that sense of oneness. And that sense of oneness would allow me to feel whole again. Not separate, not just part as separate, but define myself as part of everything else. And then the next Dharma gate that appeared was, that was all well and good, But in order to be able to do that, in order to be able to be free of this container that I had created, and in many ways the container made me feel safe, because after having gone through this experience of two levels of separation, it would require vulnerability to let go of this container, this self, and have that experience of reuniting. So what I learned was, over years of sitting and opening very slowly, was vulnerability was really my friend. Because in vulnerability, what happens is there's surrender. And it's the surrender of all the ideas and all these other aspects of, I'll speak for myself, of myself, that kept me separate. Right? There was this fear, if I let go of that, where would I go? I would drop into nothing, I would go crazy, something like that. And so the way it worked for me unfolded slowly and almost outside of my awareness. Because it happened slowly, I think if it had happened all of a sudden dramatically, it would have scared the hell out of me. But for me, it happened slowly. I allowed myself over time to be more and more vulnerable. So eventually, I came across this practice, and then this practice I stuck with now for 30 years. And with this gradual unfolding and then realizing or reconnecting again, which was very sweet. So I guess one of the things that I would like to ask you, or like to suggest that you do, is sit with the question, what is mother? Thanks.